So our scripture reading today is one of the greatest and most familiar stories in the Bible. Most of you probably heard this as in children's Sunday school, but it's also one of the greatest stories in all of literature. It's a great drama. And so we thought it'd be good to actually read it dramatically, so I'm going to have some friends come up here. Our children's choir presented the story a few years ago in a musical called The Bigger They Are, The Harder They Fall, of course. It transcends culture and time. It's a classic story of the underdog prevailing over the powerful, and it's just as engaging to our imaginations today as it was when it happened. Of course, this is the story of David and Goliath, as you know. Just for fun, I did a search on my news app here. I just plugged in David and Goliath, and would you know that dozens of stories popped up where either David and Goliath is in the headline or in the body of the story? Not because they're talking about David and Goliath, they're talking about stuff like labor unions fighting the Obama trade bill, the nation of Guam defeating the powerhouse India in World Cup soccer, and of course, the contest between LeBron and Steph Curry. You know, these were all David and Goliath type battles. But as familiar as the story is, I wonder when is the last time you actually have read it. So I'm going to ask you, with the help of these six friends, to follow along. You can either follow along in the Bible on page 445, or you can just listen, but hear the story of David and Goliath.
Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled in Socah in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes-Damim between Socah and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the village of Elah and the valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another with the valley between them. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel.
Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. If I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us. This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man, let us fight each other.
On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons, and in Saul's time he was very old. Jesse's 3 oldest sons had followed Saul to war. The firstborn was Eliab, the second Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. Jesse said to his son David,
"Take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are, and bring back some assurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah, fighting against the Philistines."
Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd, loaded up, and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking to them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying,
"Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel.
The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him.
He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel."
David asked the man standing near him,
"What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?"
They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him,
This is what will be done to the man who kills him.
When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked,
"Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle.
Now what have I done? Can I even speak?"
He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter. And the men answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. David said to Saul,
"Let no one lose heart on account of the Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him."
Saul replied,
"You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth."
But David said to Saul,
"Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or bear came to and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by the hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the God, of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine.
Go, and the Lord be with you."
Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them.
"I cannot go in these because I am not used to them."
So he took them off, and then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David,
"Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?"
And the Philistine cursed David by his gods.
"Come here, I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals."
David said to the Philistine,
"You come against me with the sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by the sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands."
As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from its sheath. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Sha'aram road to Gath and Ekron. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camp.
Thank you to our readers. Yay. Appreciate that. Well, I hope you heard this story in a new light as it was read this way. The usual approach to preaching this story is to use it to challenge believers to live courageously for the Lord and to not shrink back when we face enemies of the faith, to dare to live out our faith and be brave and take risks in our walk with God, because the battle is the Lord's. And I'm not saying I won't include some of that along the way, but partly because this story is so familiar to us, I'd like to approach it just a little bit differently. I'd like us to look closely at the three main characters in the story and consider them individually, and then I'll ask you which character you most identify with. First, though, here's just a little background on the story. The Philistines were bitter enemies of the Israelites. They were never driven out of the promised land when the children of Israel came into that land as God had instructed them to do. They failed in driving them out, and they remained a thorn in the sides of God's people throughout their entire history in that land. Over and over, they would fight border skirmishes, exchanging territory back and forth for over 1,000 years of history. 1 Samuel 17 records one such battle. But it is unique in the way that it is carried out. In this mile-wide valley of Elah, which is just about 3 miles from Jerusalem, you had the Philistine army camped on one flank of the valley and the Israelite army camped on the other flank, the valley in between. Enter our first character, Goliath. He is called a champion of the Philistines in verse 4. The Hebrew word used here is interesting. It means literally the man who stands between. And it's quite fitting for this occasion, because with the two armies facing each other, here was Goliath stepping out in the valley and offering himself to stand between the two armies. And he proposes something to the Israelites that was rather unorthodox in warfare of this age, but not unheard of. He suggests, and I'm paraphrasing his lines here, he says, instead of our armies going at each other all out and many people dying, how about we just settle this in a more civilized way? Let's fight the battle using a representative from each of the armies. I will be the champion for the Philistines. You choose your best man to be your champion. We will fight, and whichever one wins, the losers will be the slaves of the winners. And when you think about it, Goliath's proposal sort of makes a lot of sense. I mean, it was rather rational, a rational alternative to thousands of soldiers dying in battle that day. There was just one problem from Israel's perspective, and that problem was Goliath himself. Let's take a look at him. First, look at his stature. As Phyllis mentioned, he may have been 10 feet tall. Well, it says that he was 6 cubits. A cubit is the distance from your elbow to your fingertip, roughly 18 inches. And one span. A span was the distance from your thumb tip to your little pinky tip, and that's approximately 9 inches. So he was probably about 9 feet 9 inches tall. Makes Casey look like a shrimp. I mean, gosh. What are you, 6'3", I think, right? Yeah. So he was huge. His stature was very big. Second, consider that he had advanced technology for warfare. It was the best of his day. He had bronze armor. In a day when most soldiers were happy if they had leather armor, Goliath was far superior. Metal. His helmet was bronze. His coat of scale bronze armor weighed a whole bunch of shekels, and if you add that all up, it was about 125 pounds of armor. So he had to be big to be able to carry this. He had bronze armor covering his legs. He had a bronze javelin on his back. That was the weapon that you would throw for distance to get your enemy. And then he carried a long spear. And the head of this long spear was iron. And if you add, you know, count up the shekels and do the conversion, it was about 15 pounds, the head on his spear. To top it all off, he had a shield bearer who carried a large man-sized, you know, floor-to-ceiling shield to protect Goliath from any projectiles, arrows, or other things that would come toward him. Third, consider Goliath's fear factor. The guy was like a human tank. He was huge and utterly intimidating. The Israelites were frozen in their fear, and no one came forward to represent Israel in the contest, not even King Saul. And remember when Saul was anointed king by Samuel? Saul is described as standing a head taller than all the other people. Samuel said to the people, "Do you see the man the Lord has chosen? There is no one like him among all the people." You would naturally expect Saul, also as king, in his role as king, to step forward and be the champion for his people. But with the Spirit of God having left him, his courage had departed also. Finally, consider Goliath's confidence. He is completely sure of himself. He comes forward every day, twice a day, morning and evening, for 40 days, and taunts the cowering Israelites. He stands in defiance of the army of Israel. He is sure there is no one who can match him. But in what did he place his confidence? In his size, his strength, and superior technology. Now let's look at David. We observed last week that David was the eighth of eight sons of Jesse. He was easy to overlook in that family. He wasn't even considered by his father or family to be in running for the office of king when Samuel came to anoint one of his family. He was a shepherd who ironically had been selected by Saul to be his court musician, to play the harp and soothe him with when that dark madness of his evil spirit would take over. When David hears the provocative and insulting words of Goliath, he readily offers himself to be Israel's champion, to be the man standing between. Well, let's consider how he stacks up against Goliath. How was his stature? Well, he was the smallest of all his brothers. The Hebrew word that his dad uses of him when Samuel asks, "Is there another brother?" He says, "Well, yeah, there's the smallest." And that Hebrew word for smallest is runt. He's the runt of the litter. In a culture where the number of completion and perfection is seven, David being the eighth son would have been considered unnecessary, just extra baggage. He is diminutive in size. Most commentators put him in his mid-teens. He wasn't old enough yet for military service. How about David's technology for battle? Well, King Saul tried to get him outfitted in his best armor, but of course that didn't work. It was too big and bulky for David to make use of, and that again points to his small size. In fact, he went into battle with no defensive armor at all. And he only had one offensive weapon, his sling. This was not a slingshot. It was the kind of sling that you'd do this and project a rock at your enemy. That may seem really meager, and it is, certainly compared to Goliath's arsenal. But in fact, slings could be highly effective weapons in the hand of a skilled warrior. Historians tell us that at this time, slings were actually considered more dangerous and devastating than bows and arrows of this time. And he doubtless had a lot of time as a shepherd to practice his skill as a slinger. and he was evidently really good. Well, what kind of fear factor did David have? Nothing. When Goliath sees him, he is totally unimpressed, even insulted that the Israelites would send this small boy out to fight him. In verse 43, he says to David, "Am I a dog that you come after me with sticks?" Finally, consider David's confidence. I would say his confidence is mighty strong. He knows he is a capable slinger of stones, but far more than that, his confidence is in the Lord. Look again at what he says to Goliath, starting in verse 45. "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." Pretty confident. It's not he may do it, he will do it. Note the source of God's confidence, of David's confidence. It is the Lord, who literally, he said, owns the battle. It belongs to him. Where did David get such confidence? Well, surely it's from God's Spirit, who came into him mightily when Samuel anointed him to be the future king. Well, who won the battle? You know, David did, of course. But more accurately, the Lord won. Why? Why? How could David, this puny guy with a sling, defeat this mighty giant Goliath? In all of Goliath's confidence in his armament, strength, and size, he underestimated his vulnerability. Remember, Goliath had a shield bearer. We usually forget about him, that went before him. Well, that shield bearer's job was to stop any projectiles from hitting him. Now, evidently, either Goliath told his shield bearer, "Don't even bother raising the shield," or he more foolishly, stepped out in front of his shield bearer to confront David. One of those had to happen, because if the shield was up, it's just like Star Trek, you know, if your shields are up, the Klingons can't shoot you. But his shields were down, and he was vulnerable. So, who do you identify with in this story? Are you like Goliath, with an overinflated confidence in your technological prowess and your personal attributes, your size, wealth, status, career, power? Do you enjoy intimidating and domineering people? Or do you see yourself like David, a person so confident in the Lord that you have no lack of courage to face any and all who would dare oppose the gospel of Jesus Christ or insult his glorious church? Do you see yourself ready to stand in the gap, to stand in between, be that man or woman in between the church and all the forces of evil in our culture, including the devil himself, who seek to destroy the church or at least render it impotent or irrelevant? If you're like me, sure, I want to be like David. I want to have courage and zeal for the Lord. Occasionally, I do show short bursts of courage. If I'm honest, though, all too often, I find that I shrink away from the battle and cower on the sidelines. Do you identify with me here? Maybe I'm the only chicken in the group. I don't know. Sometimes I'm courageous, but most often not so much. Well, you may remember at the beginning I said we're going to talk about three characters. There's a third. And the third is a composite of King Saul and all those other Israelites who are standing in the camp and cowering in fear at the threats of Goliath. When I am honest with who I most often am, I have to say that that's the person I identify most with. But I believe there's good news for us who identify ourselves as the fearful Israelites in this story. And that good news is that God provides a champion for people like you and me. He provided David to deliver the Israelites from their petrifying fear. And certainly David is a powerful example of godly courage, and it's good when we can be like him. But I think that the real point of this story for us as New Testament believers is that David serves as a forerunner or a type of the ultimate champion that God would send. This champion would bring us victory over our greatest enemy, sin, as well as all the fear associated with the penalty of that sin. This champion would defeat the biggest giant of all, Satan, and his evil forces by becoming the man who stands between Satan and us. When we read the New Testament, specifically Hebrews 11, where we have this great roll call of the faithful, along with Abraham, Moses, and other giants of the faith, we find David listed. This great chapter closes with these words, "And all these heroes of the faith, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect." Chapter 12 opens with these words of encouragement and challenge to all Christians. "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us," that cloud being the collective saints of all the ages who have died in faith, including David, "let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith." Notice two things. First, we are not told to fix our eyes on the cloud of witnesses, on all those saints on the sidelines who are cheering for us, only on Jesus. The witnesses are cheering us on, but they would be ashamed if we turned to look at them. They, including David, all point us to Jesus. Second, know that the word translated author is the Greek word archegos. And this literally means the highest leader or champion. Jesus is our champion today. He's our David, but even better than David. And this is great news for us who struggle with courage. We have a champion infinitely better than David. He has given us the victory over all our enemies. In his victory on the cross, rising from the dead and ascending to the right hand of the Father, where he ever lives to make intercession for his children. See, he's still the man standing in between God and us. We are guaranteed the victory, not through our own power or courage, but through his. Keep your eyes fixed on Jesus, dear people. When we do this, he will supply all the courage we need when we face our Goliaths. Amen.